Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of Wild and Unprotected. I'm your host, Koji Simalde.
And I'm your co-host, Ethan Lehman.
On today's episode, we have a special guest by the name of Justin Tramble. He's the executive director at Tampa Bay Waterkeeper.
Cue the intro.
Classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFans account.
Here's to us all swimming through the ship and making more sense of it.
Wild and unprotected. Planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Nature's sexy. We need this place, so please respect it.
Hey guys, welcome back to Wild and Unprotected. On today's episode, we are fishing in my own backyard with the executive director of Tampa Bay Waterkeeper, Justin Tramble. Hey, Justin, thank you for your time today.
Hey, Koji. Hey, Ethan.
Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Really excited about the conversation.
This is our first episode that we are diving into locally in terms of where I am. And for those that are just now joining and that are really interested in something local, Justin, how about you kind of go through, who you are and kind of just expand on your early history of what you do and where you are now?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the opportunity. So I am the executive director of Tampa Bay Waterkeeper. I've been running the organization for about a year, a little over a year now. We advocate for clean water in the Tampa Bay watershed. So we do that through like a variety of ways. The biggest differentiator for us is our environmental enforcement. So we're known for being plaintiffs on some Clean Water Act cases. We're one of the plaintiffs on the Piney Point case, which, you know, if you're local here in Tampa Bay, you remember the dumpsters at the boat ramps, a variety of different Clean Water Act cases here in our region that we've been a part of. Advocacy is what we're all about, and connecting folks to advocate for the watershed here is what sort of my goal is and what we're doing already with the organization.
Expand a little bit on what the watershed is.
Yeah, so my sort of jurisdiction from a waterkeeper perspective is Hillsborough and Pinellas County. If you look at Tampa Bay, we are the largest open water estuary in the state of Florida. So basically, I guess sort of layman's terms, any water that falls like within our region, like all the creeks and rivers, that water, even if you're a couple miles like off of the bay itself, that water will find its way into the tributaries and creeks and in the rivers out through our estuary. So if you look like on the map, you see, you know, like all the major rivers in Tampa, and you see like all of the canals and all the creeks that run off of it. It's a very vast watershed here. And, you know, it also, I think that's a kind of a cool lead into the diversity of the watershed. I'm on the St. Pete side is where my wife and I live. But, you know, I can drive an hour to the other side of the bay and, you know, it looks completely different over like on the South Shore. It looks completely different in like downtown Tampa than it looks over here. So we have a very diverse watershed. I don't know if that answered the question. I've probably got some like scientist friends that are like, you didn't answer the question, speaking in the layman's terms.
That's perfect. And I was going to kind of piggyback on that, you know, kind of reverse just like a few seconds. And for people that don't like know what a waterkeeper is, something that we mentioned before we started the show, or that you mentioned before we started the show, Tampa Bay Waterkeeper is one of many waterkeepers nationally. Can you kind of expand on what water keepers do on, you know, on a national level? And then we can dive in further on the organization itself.
Yeah, for sure. So Waterkeeper Alliance is actually a global organization. There are 350 organizations like mine around the world. We are obviously specific to Tampa Bay. It's really cool to have like this network because issues that we're facing here locally are issues that others have faced globally. And being a part of the Waterkeeper Alliance allows us to like lean on some of our partners. I was actually, when I started this job, a few months in, I went to a conference in DC and was sitting at a table, you know, sort of the whole conference thing where you walk around with your name tag. And the folks at my table were from like Asia, and some of the stuff that they were dealing with was a lot different than some of the stuff that we deal with here. But then when you think about like the tie-in to our economy here, you know, the health of our watershed and how a lot of the jobs in the Tampa Bay region are tied to the health of our watershed, you start to peel off the layers and realize that like, you know, water issues globally might be like subtly different, but really, you know, water is key to having, you know, healthy communities. And so I don't know, kind of going off on a tangent there, but we're a global organization that fights these fights at a local level.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. There was a story about there was a river, and I don't know where specifically it was, but there were some developers coming in that were draining the river and turning the river into streets. And so this particular group and this director, they were, you know, fighting that in their government. And it was just really interesting. You know, we don't have it to that extreme. You know, we have to certainly develop smarter here in Florida. You know, we don't have anyone coming in and, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to make the, you know, Alafaya River a road, but we don't have that yet, but be outrageous.
Right. I couldn't even imagine if we were driving on river roads. I think one thing too, that we can kind of touch base on is, you know, the quality of the water for the audience out there. It's not just what's in the ground table. It's not just clean drinking water, like a Flint, Michigan problem. It definitely can lead up to that, and hopefully it doesn't get to that point here. But I think where we're focused with Tampa Bay Waterkeeper and, you know, me being an advocate for the outdoors, the wildscape here, as an angler, as a fisherman, and as someone that grew up in the outdoors, you know, it's one thing to be a child and realize, wow, there's such beautiful things here. Look, there's sea turtles, there's dolphins, and there's manatees. And then fast forward 20 years, you're 25, and you're actually a lot more cognizant about what's going on in the wild world, and you're seeing less and less of that. And you have to ask that question, you know, why is this happening? Is it because of population or habitat degradation? Is it because of pollution? Or is it a factor of a lot of other things? But I think a lot of people don't understand that it is, and it goes back to the foundation that is water, one of the most important elements that we have. So I just wanted to kind of draw that line between, you know, the audience that might not know exactly the focus of the water here and the importance of it. But I think that, you know, kind of diving into that a little bit more allows for people to understand how they can advocate it too. Because it's not just our generation, it's generations to come that are going to see the effects of all of what we're doing to our watershed here.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, you talk about water through the lens of like anglers. You know, I'm an avid angler. Koji, I know you're an avid angler. Ethan, I don't know if do you fish?
I'm a surfer, man. I wouldn't know the top end from the bottom end of a fishing pole.
So recreators, though, you know, our lives, it sounds like, are energized by the water, and it's, you know, aligns with like our passions. you know, but using that to advocate beyond just that is super important. So we are in, you know, expanding into drinking water, you know, looking at emerging contaminants because it is connected 100%. I mean, we just, one of our board members, Captain Dustin Pack, participated in the Bonefish Tarpon Trust study that was done recently where they discovered that there were pharmaceuticals in our redfish here in Tampa Bay. In fact, all of the major estuaries in the state of Florida had a significant amount of pharmaceuticals in their blood and tissue. And like that's 100%. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Trace of pharmaceuticals, all different kinds, opioids, antidepressants, any whatever you can think of. And it's all tied into the fact that like our wastewater infrastructure and really big picture, just our water infrastructure as a whole here in the state of Florida is significantly lagging behind our growth. I think it's really, you know, I think it's a really good opportunity to talk about how, you know, the history of Tampa Bay sort of plays into this conversation. Back in the 70s, we were declared dead on 60 Minutes, that TV show. It's funny, I talk to like a lot of middle schoolers and high school kids. And when I say this, you know, they're like 60 Minutes, like, what the hell is that? But we probably know.
It's a long time.
So there was this. Yeah. So there's this guy who, you know, went on to the show and talked about how Tampa Bay, you know, was dead. We had significant, you know, algal issues. There were blue-green algae problems. There's a picture that I use in presentations of from the Gibsonton area, which is on the other side of the bay from where I am, but looking out and just, you know, completely just covered in green sort of slime. It was hard to find seagrass then. This was, you know, 70s. You know, a lot changed since then. And folks basically sort of went up in arms and, you know, said, hey, like, you know, we need to take better care of our water, not just here in Tampa Bay, but around the country. So you had the Clean Water Act. You had on a local level some legislation that made it to where municipalities had to treat their wastewater. And this is all due to like political will and people getting fed up with our water quality issues. So we went from, you know, being declared dead, having to search for seagrass to having a very high amount. I think we had over 42,000 acres of seagrass in Tampa Bay in 2016, which was like, you know, I guess the peak since we've been recording. But since then, we've had a pretty significant decline. And a lot of that is because, you know, we need to renew our investment in the infrastructure here in Tampa Bay and the waters around the state of Florida. There's a blueprint and a template for that success, but it's going to take folks like you who, you know, surf and like Koji and I who like to fish. You know, it's going to take the passionate folks about the water to reach the folks that might not know how connected they are, to really turn conversation into political will, which then turns into infrastructure funding and investments that, you know, are needed to get us back to where we need to be. You know, I can go on. I feel like I just got on a soapbox and I just slip and fell, but, yeah. So that's sort of our big thing is like, you know, we see a movement happening here and, you know, we're trying to connect as many folks to our watershed. I mean, 1 in 5 jobs are tied to the health of the bay. So how do we get those folks that are not as passionate about being on the water involved? You know, once we get them involved, that's when the pieces start to fall and we make a difference. So that's what we're trying to do every day at Tampa Bay Waterkeeper. So
I love that. So I think that's a great opportunity. Thank you for sharing, you know, that story. I didn't know that Tampa Bay was declared dead in the 70s. I mean, that's way well before my time, but I would expect the 70s to be like, oh, it was an oasis. But for it to also be going through similar things that we see today, still 50 years later, you know, it's not a problem that just happened. It's something that consistently happens. And I think that's a good point to kind of move into is, you know, you talked about moving that needle into the political will side of things and having people kind of activate. I wanted to kind of pick your brain on the difference between an activist in this area and the difference between an advocate in this area, because I think there's a fine line in between both, and specifically within researchers in conservation. You know, can you kind of talk about the difference in both and what you've seen here just as, you know, a year of being an executive director for the Waterkeeper?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. We could probably like take that over to like a philosophy professor at like, you know, USF down the road and talk to them about that question for like a month. So I'll do my best. I think advocacy, and I say this to like a lot of like the junior advocates during our education program, advocacy can be as simple as like talking to your friends about issues, right? Being intentional about it, but it could be as simple as like, you know, hey, like you don't necessarily need to fertilize during the rainy season. You know, in fact, you can't. Advocacy can be as important or as simple as, you know, hey, like that's a nice snook that you caught, you know, just 2 years ago. I saw a dumpster filled with a bunch of them. Like maybe we should let this one go. It could be as simple as that. I think a grassroots organization like Tampa Bay Waterkeeper relies on turning normal, regular folks, I mean, like us here, into advocates, and doing that by arming folks with education. Even if it's just us simply connecting the science community with the folks that are engaged in these issues here. And that's oftentimes what our role is. Activists, you know, in my mind, go that step further. You know, when I think of an activist, I think of someone, you know, outside with a sign. You know, I think of, you know, taking that extra step in intentionality. I think in 2023, the grassroots advocacy goes a lot further than standing on a street corner with a sign or being the loudest voice in a room, or getting that, you know, splash, you know, newspaper headline. I think advocacy is the more long term, like I'm going to talk about it to the person on my left and my right, and I'm going to change behavior, whether it's mine or people around me, and change the culture of how we do things, you know, in a variety of scopes, right? But yeah, so I don't know if I answered that. I think, you know, I feel like I should have like a big beard and like Socrates.
No, so I think you did a good job with that. I definitely think you did a good job with that. I think one of the biggest challenge that advocacy, I can never say that fucking word right. My God.
Avocado-cy?
Avocado-cy.
Advocacy groups face is the fact that, you know, they're corny as hell most of the time. And people just disconnect instantly. You know, they'll see something that they don't understand that sounds too scientific, and they're like, "What the hell? Why would I even listen to this?" So that's a major challenge that I think most of those groups face, and a big portion going forward. Because I believe you're 100% right that activists had their time, and that time is past because people are so turned off to them now. But for the flip side of that coin, I definitely think it's the future. But there, you need to get over that hump of being, you know, too corny, or non-digestible. And that's definitely something that we're trying to, you know, work on, is make all of our content understandable by any person and relatable to any person, because that relatability is what is going to help be a catalyst, you know, for that positive change that most advocacy groups are looking for. So getting past that kind of corniness, repetitiveness is huge.
No doubt. And I appreciate that feedback too, because, you know, a year in to this organization, the group has, you know, my board is phenomenal. I've got 10 volunteer board members that have really carried this organization to where it is now, and we continue to grow. The culture is to be genuine. The culture is to avoid being an alarmist. You know, our big thing, and this is kind of like where we're at. This is as like simplified as I could say it. Where we exist and like our power is at the intersection of the power of people, like the power of community and people and passionate people, and the power of law. That, like, combining that is where Tampa Bay Waterkeeper is. So you can't just be a group that like energizes people or alarms people or, you know, hosts events or banquets over and over. And you also can't just be kind of like a gadfly who just sits in the corner of the room yelling at folks, you know, that they're doing things wrong. You have to be kind of in the middle there. You have to energize folks. You have to relate to folks. I mean, we're all passionate about what we're trying to protect here. And we're creating this movement of folks that are, you know, diverse and from all different, you know, jobs and different places here in our watershed, using that energy and then combine it with, you know what? Like, not only are we building this energy about our mission, but hey, when folks pollute, like, we're taking action. Like, we're using this energy that you all have built as a grassroots community, and we're going to litigate because it's not okay to dump 215 million gallons of toxic waste into our watershed. And it's not okay to dump, you know, to bypass a sewage treatment plant because you just haven't budgeted correctly. We're going to take action. So like that action along with an energetic community, and, you know, quite frankly, a lot of our growth is because of the recreational angler here in Tampa Bay. I mean, you know, there's make no mistake that Tampa Bay Waterkeeper has grown to what, you know, we are right now. We got a lot more growth to do, but because of the energy here in our recreational fishing scene and a lot of the fishing guides too here in Tampa Bay. So using that energy from that particular group and reaching out, you know, outside of that silo is what we're really trying to do. And I'll be honest with you. And I mean, I'm not trying to feel like I'm trying to sell you guys like a car or something, but not trying to sell you guys a car. Yeah. But being real, like, we are doing and moving the needle. You got folks like Captains for Clean Water, Chris and Daniel down in South Florida and Southwest Florida with Everglades Restoration. They've generated a lot of money for Everglades Restoration. And the blueprint is, you know, energizing a diverse group of folks behind, you know, the cause. And we can do that here in Tampa Bay. We got our tourism is surrounded, you know, by the health of our water, or it's not surrounded, but our tourism depends on the health of our water. We've got there's more fishing guides in Tampa Bay than there are fishing guides in the world. If that makes sense. Our economy is so dependent upon our water that there's no reason why we can't build a coalition like they've done down there and apply that here. You know, and then to go a step further, when folks pollute, they hear from us. You know, they see the Waterkeeper logo and they're like, oh, shit, you know, like I shouldn't have. I mean, no one's waking up trying to pollute a river, like we know that. But, you know, hopefully it can get us at the table to be more proactive and prevent these big catastrophic environmental disasters that are happening. They're actually happening, you know, a lot more frequent than what's known, too. So.
You hit on something that I really want to go back and touch on, and that's diversity within your board. Connection is so key, and having that diversity, different perspectives, different lifestyles is so important to building those connections. Can you speak a little bit more on the diversity portion of things for Tampa Bay Waterkeeper?
Yeah, 100%. And I appreciate you for bringing that up, Ethan. I think being intentional about getting out of the silo is really important. I mean, I think a lot of it's typically a problem in this like environmental conservation world. You kind of get into like echo chamber.
I feel like that's a lot of the world today.
Right. It is, no doubt. In order to like make a tangible impact, you need to be intentional about being able to like talk to as many different folks as possible, because you know, that's how you make a real difference. So from a board perspective, I'm really, you know, we just brought on two new board members. One is a fisheries biologist. The other works for a GIS like consulting firm that actually works for a lot of the municipalities here in the Tampa Bay region. You know, having the diversity of sort of perspective from a job sense is really important. So we have, you know, teacher, several attorneys that practice different types of law, you know, fisheries biologist, marketing, you know, being intentional about filling some of the gaps that we don't have from a knowledge perspective has been something that the board has done a tremendous job doing. And, you know, as we continue to grow, some of our programming will, you know, there will certainly be focus on making sure that, you know, we avoid that echo chamber issue and we broaden the impact by engaging the community here in Tampa Bay. Especially, you know, like we did a partnership, or we have a partnership with the Tampa Bay Kayak Anglers. If you guys haven't heard of them, you guys got to put them on your radar. Mario and Tatiana, they're a kayak angler group, and their mission is to engage like Spanish speaking folks and getting them out on the water, because you know, they were telling me that, you know, oftentimes like they feel as though their community is not engaged by like conservation groups. So getting those folks to fall in love with the water and getting out on the water will lead to them also protecting the water. You know, that's a big thing too. Like you fall in love with this estuary, then you fight for it. You know, if you're disconnected from it, you know, you don't go hard in the advocacy lane, because you don't really know what's there. So as an organization, being intentional about engaging as many folks as possible to get out on the water is a big, you know, drive for us.
That's huge. I never really like looked at it from that perspective, you know, to say there's other cultures out there that all of, you know, their upbringing, it was never talked about in this capacity, you know, and to be able to say, like, back to the advocacy point, to advocate for the health of XYZ in this area, you gotta, you know, be relatable, give them digestible things, you know, put it in a perspective that's like, this is something that can be beautiful and that can stay beautiful.
Yeah, I appreciate that question too, man. I think that's a big question. I feel like a lot of folks need to be put on a podcast to answer that, you know, and like talk through that. I think a lot of organizations can benefit from, you know, expanding their net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one thing that I know when we had our discovery call, Ethan, you weren't there for that. You definitely emphasized on the diversity, you know, within your organization and the board. And it struck a chord with me, and I knew I could bring it back to Ethan and say, hey, that's something that we're working on too, is we're in the early stages of building out our nonprofit. And being a media company that's doing something completely different and completely in its own lane, and so far away from what everyone's used to that, you know, it might not be tomorrow that we blow up and everyone's like, wow, we want to ride that wave, but it could be soon, you know, and it's because we're doing it with intention and we're saying, hey, look at how diverse we are. I mean, we're covered in tattoos, like in our 20s, trying to go into the marine, the Moat Aquarium down in Sarasota, and they didn't give us a time of day. I'm not hating on you guys down there. It just kind of, you know, we wanted to work with you with manatees and it didn't work out because of how we look.
Let's wind that back. I came all the way out from Phoenix and I didn't even get to work with anyone that I wanted to work with. Now, granted, we probably could have done a better job with communication on, you know, the heads up part, but I'm still very salty about that because, you know, diversity is something that's at the tip of the spear, you know, for me from day one, building this organization out. Diversity was one of the you know, points of emphasis for me. And it's not diversity for the sake of diversity, which I think is a topic that we deal with a lot now. You know, whether it's in media, whether it's in business, regardless of what it's in, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, pushing diversity for the sake of diversity agenda. It should be, you know, like what you were saying, Justin, it's diversity for the sake of getting out of your own echo chamber and understanding that there are different perspectives. And, you know, to Koji's point, we do look a little different than anyone else in the conservation space. And, you know, it is a little intimidating, I think, for, you know, people in our former kind of rendition of the organization to where we are now. It probably was a little intimidating to see, you know, a group of individuals that looked nothing like modern day media, nothing like, you know, modern day conservationists. And, you know, that level of diversity and coming from a different perspective, looking different, is something that I think in the future is going to enable a lot of that change and relatability. You know, there's a lot of people now that look like, you know, Koji and I. There's a lot of people that look like some of our other members or are a part of different, you know, groups, societal groups, like some of our members are. And they provide a lot of, what's the best way to put this? They provide a lot of different insight because, you know, they look through life through different lenses. So diversity has been built into the core of what Wildscape is, but it's cool to see other organizations focusing on, you know, their diversity, but in a different way than it's talked about kind of in modern day media, of getting out of that silo, you know, talking to people that might think differently than you, and not only might think differently, but might act differently. So going, you know, above and beyond and making those relationships and those connections, you know, within different silos is incredibly important for us as a culture moving forward to actually move on the items that we need to move.
Yeah. Well said. It was beautiful, actually.
Thank you. Now I'm the one slipping on the soapbox.
There was not one in there.
I'm pretty sure there was, and it was because I was trying not to choke on phlegm.
But no, all love down there in Sarasota to, you know, Moat. Hopefully in the future, we'll get that email back. But I digress.
Be like that meme, let us in!
Let us in!
Let us in!
But no, I think no matter what perspective we look at it from or how we slice the pizza, there will always be those challenges of trying to get people up to speed in the media side of things, conservation side of things, the advocacy side of things, no matter what the realm is. You know, this is going on episode 7 for us. And we've interviewed whale disentanglement specialists. We interviewed the CEO of Ocean Alliance and how he talked about, you know, he created Snotbot. And he got laughed at 10 years ago. And now he's dropping, you know, satellite suction cups on whales and flying drones through snot. And it's incredible. It's incredible what his organization has grown through. But he stuck to that perspective of like, hey, we're just going to do something different and non-invasive, and stuck to it. And here he is getting out of his echo chamber. So I think, you know, that's a really, really good point to touch on is you know, they're not just – they're not people out there that just want to be a part of something for the sake of being part of something. You know, you stick with it for long enough, you're going to hear the same things over and over. And then you're going to realize, like, okay, wait, how do we do it different? Because I'm not just trying to be the same as everyone doing something in the same lane. How do we do it different? So I'm really inspired. Thank you for inspiring me, Justin. I saw that there was just a beach cleanup here. And was it in the Riverwalk?
Yeah, we just did a partnership with the Friends of the Riverwalk over in Tampa.
Yeah, that looked incredible. You guys picked up so much trash. You know, and we had our fair share of beach cleanups too, and, you know, tried to do something in our former rendition of the company. But now it's like, we look at it from a place of how do we connect all of the dots between our media side of things, our long form content, and most importantly, our community aspect. So that's something that we are trying to bring together and shine a light on, not only from, you know, like our perspective, but more of a collaborative perspective. Like, how can Wildscape and Tampa Bay Waterkeeper do something that's fun, simple, and advocates for the educational part of things? And, you know, one thing that I heard you tell me was, when you grow, we grow, and vice versa. I think these collaboration efforts that we put together are so important on the intention that we need to grow together. But I digress. That's my soapbox.
Yeah,
did you slip off it too? Are we 3 for 3 on slippage?
I'm slipping.
Yeah, that was a slip. Yeah. yeah, sort of like rolled up. You know, I think, like, you know, I know our group, you know, we talk a lot about intentionality here internally. And what we talk about internally, we also externally message, you know, in terms of like culture and stuff. And so I really think the two biggest things are, having intentionality as an organization in our partnerships, in our action, in our programming, all that. Be very intentional, and then combine that with being genuine and being true to what we're about as a group of folks that are passionate about our watershed. Being genuine and staying true to you know, ourselves. I know, you know, this year of running this organization, I've never felt as if I've had to, you know, I'm basically in rooms with people that are way smarter than me every day. And this organization and the culture here is, you know, we prioritize the individualism and being genuine, and we all bring something to the table. And I think, like, you know, carrying that all the way from, you know, one-on-one conversations with myself and board members or myself and interns, all the way to how we externally communicate in our email blasts and how we communicate with policymakers and elected officials. You know, from top to bottom, that's the culture. And I think that's the key to, you know, building something sustainable in this world, you know, in this world of, you know, conservation and advocacy. So people see through the BS. So I think that's pretty important to make sure that you don't fall into that trap. So.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that's a good segue into our next section of, you know, people seeing through the BS fairly quickly. What is some of the things that people don't see? What are some stories that you might have, Justin, that could be, you know, something that Nat Geo wouldn't ask, or something that, you know, you would be talking about on the skiff and then wouldn't want repeated? That's kind of what we want to dig into, is tell us some of the wild things, man, what you've seen.
Yeah, basically a story that'll make someone say, go, what the fuck?
you know, fortunately, I, within this past year, haven't really had too many of the WTFs. Prior to this role, I worked in local government, and you know, I had a lot of WTF moments there. You know, when you're working with a diverse group of folks that have all different expectations, and you do get a lot of like those moments where you're just like, "What the hell?" You know, as keeping like the Waterkeeper hat on and under the umbrella of this organization, You know, I guess kind of the biggest thing that I didn't really realize that I was going to have to manage is, you know, coming from local government, you know, oftentimes there'd be folks that would come and voice their concerns about issues. Like, you know, there was someone, you know, coming into to City Hall to complain about, you know, a cat, you know, always getting on top of their car at a park and like thinking that like the city could do something about that. Hearing folks complain about issues, you know, was sort of something that you got used to. Well, now, a lot of the job is, you know, look, we've been intentional about creating an opportunity and a vehicle for passionate people. However, there is sometimes like that not in my backyard thing that goes on where folks are, you know, they turn to us because they don't want, you know, this, you know, this shopping center there, even though it was always a shopping center and someone's just coming in to make it nice. Or, you know, we get a lot of folks that, you know, despite our efforts to be very intentional and strategic with our action as an organization, we have a lot of passionate folks that, oftentimes, you know, are reactive and we appreciate the energy and we appreciate the engagement, but it doesn't really fall, within the, mission of what we're trying to accomplish, like long term. So trying to like manage that, you know, has been a big thing for me. Kind of like right off the bat when I started the job, you know, getting the voicemails a few times a week about, you know, the neighbors building this or this and that, you know, that's been, you know, this is not spicy stuff, what I'm telling you. But I think it's important because I think getting kind of like in the mindset of like an organization like ours and understanding that we get a lot of like stuff thrown our way, understanding like what to act on is really important. And honestly, it's a learning curve. As I'm rambling, I'm trying to think of like an outrageous, story to tell y'all. I will say this. So we partner with, some local scientists to do some seagrass monitoring. And, we've been into some like pretty deep, you know, water where I know that like, you know, I know I've seen like some bull sharks and like things that I would be like thinking of, you know, that'd be in my head. But it turns out that, you know, I should be more afraid of the dolphin in Tampa Bay and their behavior than I should be of the sharks. So, keep that in mind when you jump in the water. Dolphin can get pretty aggressive, apparently. And once my friends that if they listen to it, they'll be like, why did you call me out on the dolphin story? But I have some people that we take out on the skiff that are afraid of dolphins. So I had to hop in the water a few days ago. And to be honest with you, I was thinking about dolphins because of that. So,
okay, we need to expand. We need to expand. I need to know why. I have to know why someone might be more afraid of a dolphin than a shark.
You know what? I'm going to let your imagination go, but you could probably throw some YouTube, you know, like dolphin, dolphin assaults, and see what you get.
I mean, okay. So our second episode, was with Dr. Claire Lacey from the Marine Mammal Research Program at the University of Hawaii. And, you know, to kind of let you know how far we go on this show, the end of the show, we ended up talking about dolphin sex. So I'm sure there's probably some similarities between the stories, that she told and this dolphin assault.
Yeah. I'm not going to tune into that episode because then I will literally be afraid of dolphins. I will have nightmares of dolphins. So
it's a good one. She's amazing. We got a little raunchy there at the end. dolphins are something else. You know, personally, I'm kind of in the same boat when it comes to, you know, sharks probably not being as scary as people make them out to be. You know, my thought with sharks are they don't have any hands and they don't even like humans. So, and they don't really know what humans are. So the only way you figure out, I'm hungry, what is this in front of me, I probably won't like this, is to bite. You know, that's the only way to figure it out. So sharks aren't necessarily scary to me. I find them you know, more fascinating than anything. But dolphins, they're too damn smart for their own good. They'll fuck with you just to fuck with you, just because of their level of intelligence. So that's what kind of makes me, you know, a little nervous, about dolphins sometimes. But I mean, all of those creatures are just so amazing that, you know, I get caught up in awe anytime, you know, we're around them, and Koji and I are lucky enough to be able to do this kind of thing, and be around these animals. So, I was definitely wondering if there was any correlation in those stories.
I'm going to let it ride, man. I'll let you Google some stuff. But yeah, no, that was my attempt at trying to come up with something. I'm going to get made fun of for that.
No, you're fine. You're going to come up with it as soon as we hit stop on the recording. You're going to be like, "Oh, I should have told that story."
Yeah, we'll do a post recording of like, this is just coming in right after we finished recording the episode. Justin emailed us a really funny story, so Koji and I will reenact and tell it for everyone's imagination.
No dolphins were hurt in the making of this reenactment.
No dolphins were hurt. You know, I think we take a lot of this, you know, speaking of dolphins, not in this weird way, but like we definitely take a lot of stuff for granted here at Koji. You know, fishing here, you know, like I love to like trailer my skiff down to like, you know, Everglades, or, you know, Becca, my wife, and I go down to the Keys and love going to like different places. But, you know, in our backyard, like in this major like metropolitan area that is the Tampa Bay area, we have like this beautiful estuary that is diverse in, you know, its flora and fauna, and, you know, there's all different types of great fishing opportunities here. We really have like a phenomenal estuary that deserves to be protected. And I quite frankly, definitely take it for granted. You know, when you see the dolphin and you see just the bird life here and the manatees and just what we have in our freaking backyard, I think a lot of folks take it for granted. So it's worth don't want to slip off of a soapbox again, but worth pointing out.
No, I had definitely agree with you. I've seen some of the most incredible wildlife like interactions from my paddleboard and back in the mangroves. And when Ethan was here last in November, I took him on my second paddleboard, and we were going to try and get some footage, some B-roll for our manatee episode of Shoreline Stories. And I go to this spot in, you know, the north part of the bay, and I'm like, dude, I know they're here. They're always eating the grass off of these sailboat lines. They're going to be here. And like the water was real murky that day. And Ethan instantly puckered up and was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to get in this water. You know, I don't know about this water. And usually it's like, you know, like the Gandy area can be extremely clear and just beautiful, and you can see things for hundreds of yards. This day was not like that. It was like chocolate milk. And sure enough, like we saw a couple manatees, and I think it was just towards manatee like mating season, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, they go back there and they like fully surface out of the water. I mean, these like 14, 15 foot long males are coming out of the water, flapping their tails and smacking them. And like, it's explosive. And you're like, what are these sea cows doing? Like, I didn't even know they could be aggressive like this. And they're like, they're just super active in this area. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, Ethan, if you get in this water, we got to get footage. And mind you, he's never been on a paddleboard. So that was one challenge. Another thing was getting into murky water. And then another thing too is like they're territorial. You know, if you go into their mating grounds, and even if you're just fishing, you'll look down and they're under the skiff. They're under the boat. They're looking at you like, what are you and what are you doing here? You know, I've had them come up and chew like on the side of the paddleboard, like scare the absolute shit out of me. And I'm like, oh my God, that's just a manatee. I swear. I thought it was a Loch Ness or something. So back to your point of this estuary just being something so, you know, taken for granted. I think it's super important that we touch base on that. You know, I don't. So like last week, and I'm just going to story time now. Last week I had visited my sister. She lives in Riverview. So like the Gibbonston area. And she's like, hey, do you want to go to the beach? And I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking St. Pete Beach. I could walk the beach with a fly rod and maybe, you know, catch a snook. And she's like, no, drops a pin. And she's like, Clearwater Pier. And I'm like, okay, great. Let's go to Clearwater Pier on Saturday. So we go to Clearwater Pier and I just leave the rods at home. I just bring a bottle of water and a towel. And I'm like, I'm just going to sit on the beach here. And I think where I'm going with this is that although for us as anglers and advocates of clean water and the wildlife that we see all the time, compared to the average family, you know, the weekend warriors, the people that work hard and that want to spend their time with the people they love, going to the beach for them and sitting in knee deep water and splashing around is their, you know, is their perspective of we're not taking this for granted. So despite our different views on the water here, everyone absorbs it in a different way. So I think as we kind of start to wrap up, it's one thing that can be noted that not everyone sees it the same way. And that's a big challenge. That's a very big challenge to be an advocate for that. Because how do you bring Tampa Bay Waterkeeper to someone on the beach that has no clue what the estuary looks like, has no clue of what the mangroves do, of what the seagrass is, you know? And yeah, there's just a lot to unpack. There's so many different avenues to advocate for.
Yeah. Let me just jump in though, really quick. I think, you know, water quality and water quality testing is a big part of our organization. So we test for fecal indicator bacteria at, you know, several sites in the Tampa Bay area on a biweekly basis. And we posted on an app. We have an app called a Swim Guide app. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, we talk about diversity earlier in this conversation. Well, the diversity of like recreators and how, you know, like you and I engaging with the water is usually with a 7-weight, right? Looking for tail and redfish.
Okay, let's expand. What the hell is a 7-weight?
It's not like a fly rod. So our way to engage is, you know, going out there with the fishing rod. But that's no different than someone else's, you know, going to a beach and putting their feet in the water. I think, you know, a way that we've been able to reach those folks and the way that I believe we're going to be able to break down, you know, any barrier there in terms of becoming an advocate, you know, is being able to let folks know like, hey, like there's a significant amount of NRO. There's a significantly high reading of fecal indicator bacteria at the Gandy Beach, you know, where a lot of folks are like, you know, this the other day, there's a high reading. If those folks know where they're putting their feet, it's no different than like where we're putting our fishing rod or where, you know, Ethan is putting his, you know, surfboard or, you know, I just think, or even like the water that you drink, I think it's all just connected and being intentional about, you know, reaching the folks that don't have a fishing rod in their hand is huge. So that water quality aspect, I guess, Koji, my point is that water quality aspect, that's a way to reach those folks that are on Clearwater Beach, you know, like, you know, it was fascinating to me when I worked at Treasure Island during the 2018 Red Tide event. The more recent one that was kind of like during COVID. There were tons of folks that were setting up like their chairs and, you know, the beach was packed like kind of middle through COVID just because folks, you know, came down here to get away or whatever.
Get out of their homes because they were in jail out here on the West Coast.
Yeah, so they come to Florida, and we had a red tide that was significant. And so folks were, you know, vacationing right next to, like, dead fish. And, you know, when I worked at the city, you know, our staff, the folks that were out on the water or on the beach, you know, would come in at the end of the day, like, ah, it's rough out there. It's hard to breathe. there were folks that were like on vacation from the Midwest or from New York and Northeast that were here, and they were going to the beach. They didn't really know what was going on out there. They didn't know about red tide. They, you know, hell, they might not even have known what was going on, you know? So like educating folks about the water quality, and, you know, I think the tourism component is a big opportunity there, because we need as many people to fall in love with our water here in Tampa Bay as possible. So we need to be able to turn advocates out of the folks that come here, and that have come here for years, and their family is going to continue to come here when their kids grow up. We need those folks to also put their money behind, you know, Tampa Bay estuary restoration, and put their money behind groups like ours. So that way they can have this beautiful place to come to. So I think there's a huge opportunity. I mean, when I start talking about this, like, I start to get excited about like opportunity, you know, and a lot of it has to do with like diversifying our engagement, you know? So back to that, you know, 100%. The more folks we can get falling in love with this place and understanding that there are issues, the more chance we have at, you know, protecting, improving, and preserving Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and to take that a step further, people need to understand that the issues are solvable, and that, you know, these issues aren't that big. You know, small changes, small amounts of commitment, whether it be financially or time-wise, can help make these problems go away and make this all better.
100%.
Yeah, I can hear the passion in your voice when you talk about that challenge of diversifying your reach, which is a great segue into, you know, kind of our last segment of, you know, how can people be connected to Tampa Bay Waterkeeper?
Yeah, so it's simple. We have TampaBayWaterkeeper.org. Our website has a robust amount of info on it. Not only does it connect you with the organization, you can learn about some of our work. I'm really proud of the fact that, like, under the issues section on our page, we have some of like the big issues, you know, stormwater, wastewater. You can actually learn about what you can do on an individual level to create tangible change and make an impact on that web, on that site. So like we provide resources, we provide like a bullet pointed sort of step by step, like here are all the different steps you can take to make a difference. Our organization, and I talked about it at the beginning, relies 100% on just grassroots support. So we've got like memberships available. You know, folks are passionate about the watershed and certainly see us as difference makers, and we're going to continue to be the difference maker here, but we can't do that without the community getting behind our efforts. In order to make the impact that we need to make, we definitely need to, you know, become stronger in our ability to, you know, have this environmental enforcement that we do. A lot of the advocacy and outreach stuff that we're doing takes resources, takes time. And the only way we get that is by folks supporting us. So I would encourage you to look up TampaBayWaterkeeper.org. And then on social, we're on there. We see ourselves as sort of a megaphone, and we, you know, we help sort of get some of the science in front of our community. And, you know, right now with the end of the legislative session in Tallahassee, we've been pretty active on a few issues that have come up in Tallahassee. So being part of our organization and our email list provides the opportunity to like write letters, write emails. We had a veto request for a fertilizer preemption that's still live right now. So yeah, just getting involved. We're trying to continue to provide opportunity for individuals to move the needle. So
that's awesome. Do you guys have any current projects that you're working on that you want people to know about?
Yeah, man. So I'm really excited. We've got something called the Patrol Program that we're about to launch. It's a joint effort between us and the Tampa Bay Estuary Program. The idea is to arm folks that are out on the water with a way to report issues that they're seeing. So one of the things from my previous experience in local government, folks would always call and be like, hey, you know, there's dead fish on the beach, or there's a, you know, gas spill, or, you know, there's fish kills and algae. And we would have to look up like where to connect those folks to make sure that the information gets passed along to the appropriate entity. Well, our report pollution page on our website has a streamlined, like all of the different reporting entities are on that page. It's available. And so the patrol program is going to be basically like a QR code on skiff stickers, which you put on your boat, on keychains, on all this different stuff. The idea is that folks that are at the beach with their family or walking the river walk or at the sandbar or pulling a flat for redfish can see issues and right there with their phone, because everyone has a phone, they can report the problem that they see. So it's a citizen science approach. It's providing an opportunity and a mechanism for to leverage our network and our growth to provide like data to some of the scientists here and to some of the enforcement entities as well. So patrol program that should launch in the next month or two. That's something that I'm really excited about.
That's incredible. Yeah. I was going to ask when could people expect to see that kind of roll out? Cause FWC can't handle everything, you know? I'll definitely be taking part of that patrol program because there's some stuff that I'm like, whew, someone needs to see this. Too many dead pelicans, you know, too many dead birds just everywhere. Fishing line, yeah. All kinds of stuff. And we can go on and on and on. But no, that's incredible, Justin. I really, really enjoyed, you know, digging deep into and honestly probably just scratching the surface of of your organization and what you do. And it's been a long time coming. I think we're getting good. We're getting to a good point of wrapping the show. If there's anything that you think you want to touch base on any further, I think today or right now would be a great opportunity to do that. Any last thoughts before we kind of close out?
No, I think what you guys are doing is awesome. You know, just to say it again, you know, being intentional and being genuine, it's what my organization's all about, and I could tell that it's what you guys are all about. And I think that that's what folks are attracted to. And I think that's what gets stuff done, you know, nowadays, you know, making sure that's sort of like the culture that you have internally and externally. It's what it's all about. So it's cool to have you guys, you know, on board as friends. I know Koji, you and I were talking about, connecting offline and you know, building a friendship, no doubt looking forward to doing that with you too, Ethan. And we really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and wear the waterkeeper hat and, you know, talk about dolphins or whatever the hell I was talking about. So,
yeah, I need to get one of those hats out here, out to the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, I got, we'll send you some. I'll, Koji, if you don't mind, after this, maybe shoot over the, your email, I'll get you, or your address, I'll get you guys some Tampa Bay Waterkeeper swag. We got a lot of cool stuff, so you can buy it on the website too. But you guys,
I'm looking at it right now. This shop is pretty damn good. I've been cruising the website since you've been talking about it. It is very robust. I'm very impressed with it, and I think one of the things that I want to really call out for the listeners is, it is really easy to donate to this organization on the website. So if you guys are in the Tampa Bay area, this is meant to be, you know, local outreach for the Tampa area. So make sure you check out the website and give some support to these guys.
Thanks, Ethan.
Well, I think that's a great way to kind of put the cap on this one. Justin, it's been a pleasure, man. I'm looking forward to building this relationship and collaborating on whatever's in store for us in the future. Thank you for your time. I think without further ado, we can sign off, man. Thank you.
See you guys. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected Podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Open.